Good evening. This is Mae Bressel in Carmel, California. It's tape number 450, July 18th, 1980, side one of the tape. For those of you that have been regular subscribers to these tapes for quite a few years, there's going to be a change of format. It won't affect the new listeners as much as it will the older ones, at least for the next few weeks to come. I went off the air at KLRB in Carmel 2 years ago, in 1978, in May of 78. There were various reasons that I went off the air, and I do have tapes available for those of you that don't have them. The last tape that I did from KLRB, except for guest appearances, was May the 14th, 1978, called The Serpent's Egg, explaining why I was transferring from the half-hour news service to an entire hour of broadcasting, because I didn't feel that a half hour was long enough, and there were personal reasons, certain threats around us, that I felt I should get off the air a live time spot on the station and go to the tape cassette newsletter. But so many events have taken place that pertain to the continuous series of broadcasting that I've been doing for the past 9 years. The Reagan nomination, the wanting to overturn the abortions in the United States, the escalation of the nuclear plants as against solar energy and so forth. I'm getting so many phone calls and letters and requests that I decided to go back on to KLRB. Now, the broadcast will be Sunday night from 10 to 11, 1 hour a week. The news will be identical to what I've been doing on the tape cassettes, except that the cassette machine will be plugged into the station, and you will receive, the tape you receive will be what is on the air that week. Now, there's been a 2-year lapse, time-wise, in information. Stories of the Pope from Auschwitz, or Operation Condor, or Alternative 3. These are new terms for people that have not kept up with the work that I'm doing. There's a large audience from Santa Cruz and Watsonville, Salinas, Carmel, Monterey area, and also down in Soledad. And these terms are totally unfamiliar to them because the major sources of news in the area don't carry very much about the current books, the space programs, or literature about possible genocide and the topics that I cover each week for you on the tapes. So there will be a little bit of repetition, but not much. For the sake of you that are regular subscribers, I will just turn them on to the list of past broadcasts that we've done, tapes, and they can order those as other people do if they want information on those subjects. They can get the back orders and get the list from me. The tapes that I make here go out every Friday, so there'll be a 2-day delay making a broadcast on Sunday night. I will get it to the tape center Monday. I believe that they're closed on Mondays here, so that maybe it's Tuesday. It will be mailed out to you instead of on the weekend. So there is that difference. You will expect after July 27th, that will be the first broadcast, that there will be that delay of a few days. It isn't that anybody took your tapes or the mail interfered. There will be a 3 or 4 day delay, and then they'll come the same day every week after that, hopefully. But there will be that change. And for many of you, I promised an overview, one tape with an overview of why I do the work, what I have done, what I have discovered, how I got into the work, the sources of information. And it may be next week as an introduction, getting back to the air with a whole new audience in addition to some of the older listeners, that I'll just do an overview. I'll see how the news goes next week. There were a lot of deciding factors in going back to KLRB. I think one of the most important factors was a man who called me several weeks ago, and he listened to my KLRB shows that were later aired every week on KZAP in Sacramento. And he has an uncle that lives in Honduras, and he remembered what I had said about the Nazis and many broadcasts about the Nazis and the Kennedy assassination. And when he was in the Honduras with his uncle, the subject came up of Joseph Mengeles. That man is the notorious criminal from World War II, the Angel of Death, they called him at Auschwitz. He's the subject of the book, The Boys from Brazil. He lives in Paraguay and Uruguay. He's between Brazil, Paraguay, Uruguay, Argentina, and Chile. Traveled all around South Central America and did experimentations. For all we know, he could be doing them continuously today. Physical experimentations on twins and blue eyes and genetic experimentations. And He determined as people went into Auschwitz who lived and who died. He was known as the Angel of Death, written up, as I say, in many, many books, Joseph Mengele's. And when this particular person was down in Honduras asking his uncle about Mengele's, he had the feeling that his uncle was a war criminal, or never apprehended during the war, but a spy for the Nazis at the Oakland base. And it reminded me very much of the book Sabotage that I have reviewed or mentioned on this program and given you the title of that book by Michael Sayers and Albert Kahn. And he described the activities of his uncle during World War II, and that he had reason to believe that Mengele's was associated with his uncle. The both of them were around 89 years old, he believed. And the subject came up from what he told me on why was Joseph Mengele's never hung at Nuremberg. Mengele's is a well-known name. They make farming tractors and farming equipment in Germany. And Mengele's was living very comfortably, quite wealthy, after World War II for 4 or 5 years, and wasn't recognized or identified or even sought at the time of the trials of Nuremberg. It's a fact that Mengele's, when he was recognized, fled down to South America and supposedly had continued his experiments on human beings down in South America. And when the subject came up with the uncle, why wasn't Mengele's prosecuted at Nuremberg, the answer, according to this person, was he was an American citizen. And that's why he wasn't tried as a German person in the War Crimes Tribunal. The Americans were trying the Germans, and this person told me that Mengele's, according to his uncle, was an American citizen. So he proceeded through the Freedom of Information to get information on Joseph Mengele's, and he called me to tell me what he discovered. And it was this discovery that I want to share with you today and this evening, and also to explain that because he was able to follow this through and get this information, and because the contact was an unknown person, not somebody I knew through correspondence or otherwise, but who I had influenced to develop at least some sense of curiosity on this subject, I decided that I should be back on the air reaching as many people as I can, because all of us combined may be able to use our energies and intelligence to come up with continuous pieces of information that put the puzzle together of why we're headed towards World War III, and hopefully use that same intelligence and energy to expose some of the people that are leading us down that path. I suppose you want me to talk about Ronald Reagan and the Republican convention this week, but I'd rather talk about Joseph Mengele's, because Mengele's works with the people that nominated Ronald Reagan, that will work with Ronald Reagan. I'm going to share with you what he got from the FBI through Freedom of Information Act and give you a copy. The FBI report dated December the 8th, 1966. Director of the FBI to the director from the Los Angeles office regarding Joseph Mengele on November the 15th, 1966, and this part is blanked out. They advised that he recently received, the FBI agent received the following information. Recently, a man stopped in the office of an attorney in Las Vegas named, and that's blanked out, and advised that they wanted Nazi war criminal Joseph Mengele, the wanted criminal, is masquerading under the name of Harold Endenen and resides in Riviera, Arizona. This community is supposed to be 5 miles south of Bullhead, Arizona. Checking with the auto club, I find that Bullhead City is on the Colorado River near Davis Dam. The FBI wrote that, which really has nothing to do with Mengele's at all. Continuing the report, it said the informant stated that Mengele's is masquerading as a construction worker. He has dyed his hair, has scars, has plastic surgery. The informant refused to identify himself to, and the name of the attorney in Vegas is there, who has offices at, and that's blanked out. Harold, blanked out, further advised the name may be spelled Endiman, E-N-D-I-M-A-N. The FBI agent's names are blanked out. The attorney in Las Vegas is blanked out, but the Endiman is there. It goes on, the files of the Los Angeles office reflect that one, and they have another alias, and it obviously can't be Harold Endiman or Endenen, because they've already stated that, Aka Joseph Mengele, was the subject of a report of special agent, and they blocked that out. dated February the 9th, 1944, in New York City, New York. He was the subject of denaturalization proceedings, apparently because his name appeared on a Nazi party list. And the final sentence of this document, or the next to last sentence, Mengele was naturalized. Naturalized American citizen, December the 5th, 1932, U.S. District Court, Southern District, New York, under certificate number, and that's blanked out. The Los Angeles office has no information concerning the results of the denaturalization proceedings or whether Mengele ever became a Bureau fugitive. Now, to get this straight, Joseph Mengele in 1966 was in Las Vegas, Nevada. 1966 is the year that Robert Mayhew, head of the assassination teams for the federal government under the guise of the Hughes Organization, from 1960 on, they had worked with organized crime, John Rosselli, Sam Giancana, and Sheffield Edwards, the American team, William Harvey, James Angleton, and the assassination teams. Mayhew worked with the FBI and the CIA, who was from Boston. He came out to Vegas and to work for the Howard Hughes Organization. 1966 is the year that there was no Howard Hughes, but which the organization moved in to take over the syndicate, the skimming money, the tables from organized crime, and combine it under the cloak of the Summa Corporation that made the tool bits, the Howard Hughes Organization for drilling oil, and also multi-government contracts for escalating the war in Vietnam, which began as soon as John Kennedy had been assassinated and the airplane aerospace industry began to build its muscles with contracts as soon as the chance of withdrawing from Vietnam was pulled away and the war escalated. So the year that Mengele's was in Nevada was the year that the Hughes Organization took over the state of Nevada, literally took it over. And of course, the senator from Nevada, LaSalt, who manages the Ronald Reagan campaign, whose name you heard very much on television this week, was in Nevada, and this particular lawyer, whose name is blocked out, should be revealed by the Federal Bureau of Investigation if he was working with Mengele's or Robert Mayhew or Paul LaSalt or anyone from the Hughes Organization, because I've claimed all along that that is the umbrella cloak for the Nazification of America and the world, if they can succeed in doing it. Now, the name Harold Edelman, and Harold Edelman is important because somewhere in my many files, and I don't have the material alphabetical the way I should, I don't have anybody to help me, and sometimes I don't have time to cross-file articles. Many times I don't. So you have to put your thinking caps on and see if you come across the name Edelman or Edelman in your work. Now, as far as the denaturalization proceedings, he was the subject of a report in 1944 in New York. The book by Rees, The Nazis Go Underground, tells about in May of 1943 when the Nazis realized that they could not win the war against the Soviet Union, and members of the Gestapo and the highest-ranking Nazis began to break away from Adolf Hitler's organization, at least on the table, not really, but to retrench for that World War III, to rearm, to arm the world against the Soviet Union one more time, which is where we're heading now. So that the important thing is that in 1944, many of those Nazis could be traveling around here. They were working with Alan Dulles and Chase Manhattan Begg and the OSS that became the CIA and John Foster Dulles. And the very team that put Hitler into power didn't want Hitler to lose the war, that wanted to make an agreement with Great Britain to go in and fight the Soviet Union, were begging Franklin Roosevelt to arm, you know, with Germany against the Soviet Union. Those people were very active in the United States in 1944. J. Edgar Hoover was vice president of Interpol. He worked with the Nazis. He worked with Meyer Heydrich, who was one of the three men that met in May of 43 when the Nazis went underground. So that the fact that the FBI writes a report in 1966, this was before J. Edgar Hoover was dead, saying that the FBI had no information whether or not the denaturalization proceedings ever took place or whether Joseph Mengele was a fugitive, Bureau fugitive, leaves it quite open and raw that they didn't even consider him a war criminal. The U.S. District Court of New York City made him a naturalized citizen, according to this report, in 1932. Joseph Mengele was a United States citizen. In the book Aftermath, Ladislaus Fargo describes a lot about Joseph Mengele. You can look up in the index and in the other books on Nazi Germany about Mengele. But I tried to get a chronology of the years. He has a tale of how Mengele left Germany, how he lived in Germany successfully. And then he describes part of his life in South America, and he goes to an episode. Nothing happened. It was fairly quiet, and there was a time period until 1965. And then 12 young Jews in Brazil had banded together, Fargo describes, and they wanted to kidnap Mengele, and the men were discovered, and all their throats were cut from ear to ear. They were seen floating down the river with their arms outstretched as if they were crucified. And it goes into the death of these people that wanted to get Mengele. And then there's a jump in years, and it suddenly, on the next page of this book, Aftermath, suddenly it seemed that Mengele's moment of truth was at hand. In the summer of 1968, a secret agent from Brazil, called a Soldier of Fortune, came calling on him. He was using the name Dr. Errico. Well, in this detailed chronicle of Nazis after World War II, Fargo jumps from 1965, where there was this attempt to murder Mengele, kidnap him and murder him, and then the people that were going to do that were caught and had their throats cut, and then he jumps to 1968. So that could explain that Mengele, after the confrontation with those people, did come to the United States in 66. And was in the United States for a time, because there is this jump in time that isn't explained, and he could have been in Nevada, and he could have been in Arizona. Also, the fact that they knew that he was living in Arizona, the FBI wrote a report that he was living in Arizona in 1966, is important, because Sedona, Arizona is a place I've discussed on radio programs before. I got information about a person who was involved in the John Kennedy assassination who was taken to a trailer camp, and it's a compound on private territory where he was controlled and turned into a zombie and his memory erased. And there are mind control experimentation places in Arizona and in Sedona, Arizona. And also, as soon as John Kennedy was killed, Marina Oswald was taken by Priscilla Johnson, who was her CIA control agent, to Sedona, Arizona. And Marina's memory was literally erased. If she wanted to know what Lee Harvey Oswald did or didn't do when she was pushing the book for Priscilla Johnson called Marina and Lee, she would ask Priscilla and look to Priscilla on television or on radio and say, Priscilla knows more about Lee than I do. Marina Oswald was taken another time to Sedona, Arizona, and it was a great, supposed to be a vacation for her, but I did get information from people when I was doing a lot of work or interest in mind control, which I'm still interested in, particularly as it related to the people involved in these various assassinations. And Sedona, Arizona, as well as other places in Arizona, is a place for experimentation. And the FBI knew that Mengele had other names and was capable of being in the United States and weren't even aware of whether or not he was a member of the Nazi Party that should be deported. They didn't know about the denaturalization proceedings, but the American people were never told that he was a naturalized citizen. To lend more credence to this story, there is this new book out that I've referred to, and I'll probably be going back to it many times, The Untold Story, the new book by Charles Hyman on Errol Flynn. And in that book, he tells about the member of the Nazi Party who got Flynn working for him as a member of the Gestapo. His name is Dr. Hermann Friedrich Urban, described as a violent anti-Semite, a strong love of Adolf Hitler. He grew up, according to Hyman, in fiercely anti-Semitic atmosphere of Vienna. And Mr. Urban's identification cards have been verified by the U.S. government in the National Archives and elsewhere as being part of an espionage ring of the Gestapo. While he was working for the Gestapo, he also was a member of the Rockefeller Institute and studied Australian Department of Aborigines and worked with the Rockefeller Institute. He joined the Nazi Party, according to Hyman, in 1922. That was the year before Himmler joined. and became the head of the Gestapo, and then Urban took up residence in the United States. 2 years before he joined the Nazi Party, he'd come to the United States, but he joined the party in 1922 and then came back to the United States. And November the 10th, 1930, in San Francisco, he took his American citizenship and swore allegiance to the United States of America, being a member of the Nazi Party over in Vienna. And so he was studying tropical medicine, traveling all over the world. But he came to San Francisco, 30 to 31, and got his passport in California as an American citizen. And I mentioned a new book out about the Tsar's family coming to San Francisco and a first cousin of the Tsar working at the Hoover Tower with the Reagan cabinet, the men that Ronald Reagan would use if he becomes the president. And the Tsarists and the White Russians and the Nazis have accumulated at the Stanford University and the Hoover Tower the memorabilia and the active files of the Nazi Party continuously ever since it was formed. And this group banded together are the Tsarists and the Nazis. So that San Francisco seemed to be the stopping place when the Tsarists left Manchuria and went to Shanghai. They arrived in San Francisco, so that the coast here has been the center not only of warfare industries and aerospace and spaceship planning and Rockwell and the various multinational toys, the war weapons and the space weapons covering California and the coast of California. But San Francisco was the recipient of the Nazis and the Tsarists, and they combined evidently on the West Coast. We were growing more than oranges and fruits here in California at the time. I think we thought of California as maybe garlic center, artichoke center, and fruit, vegetables, and lettuce, and so forth. It's a large agricultural state, but along with that has been the nucleus of the warfare state. And you can see why, if these people had moved to San Francisco and set up their headquarters, how important these wars, the planning of the war against Russia, another time around, the Germans lost twice, Napoleon lost twice, and Japan several times, and the combined energies from California that have been pushing the Richard Nixon and then the Ronald Reagan ticket come from this nesting ground out here. So Urban was in the United States. He got a citizenship in San Francisco, then traveled around disguised as a white Russian, traveling Marseille, Shanghai, and Manila. Got involved with drug smuggling, and which is a typical part of the Gestapo work, the combination of the drugs, narcotics, morphine, and so forth. And then Urban, this Nazi scientist, met up with Errol Flynn and was instrumental in England and in the United States and around the world with their Gestapo spying and their violent anti-Semitism. So if a member of the Gestapo from the very early days of its formation was an American citizen, it's very easy and possible for Joseph Mengele to also pick up citizenship papers so that he had the protection in case Germany lost the war of not being prosecuted because he was an American citizen. He wasn't charged as a traitor to America, and he wasn't charged as a German citizen for war crimes. There's a very good book out that I'll be referring to over and over again on various tapes in the future called The Interpol Connection, an inquiry into the International Criminal Police Organization, and it goes into our FBI, the CIA, Nazis, KGB agents, drug dealers, and Watergate connections. And the link of J. Edgar Hoover, the FBI, to the Nazi organizations and the protection of the Nazis is an interesting story that I've just briefly touched on from time to time, and we could spend a lifetime just delving into those links. But these books are available, and the fact that in 1966 the FBI was so casual about Joseph Mengele's and that alias that he had. He had over 20 aliases, but the fact that he was in Nevada in 1966 when the USA organization moved into Nevada and was in Arizona is important. And the cavalier attitude of the FBI about covering up his American citizenship instead of being outraged or having an all-out alert is important when you see that document. I compare that FBI document on Mengele's to the one they sent out about me in 1967. Those of you that have that tape, I did on that FBI document might remember that in 1967 there was an alert to all agencies of the FBI to begin files, to start files on Mae Bressel for the Secret Service, the FBI, and the various government agencies, because I was afraid of fascism and had stated it publicly. Those were their words. She even stated it publicly. Mengele's wasn't a danger to the United States. Mae Bressel was a danger. There was an alert to begin files on Mae Bressel, not to look for Joseph Mengele in Arizona or in Nevada. Just several weeks ago in the New York Post, there was another article about Errol Flynn and his role with the Nazis and the Duke and Duchess of Windsor. This was sent to me from the New York Post, from listeners in New York. Top secret documents from the British intelligence reveal that in 1937, Errol Flynn brought Nazi leader Rudolf Hess and Martin Bormann to Paris to meet the Duke and Duchess of Windsor. Hess or his double, one of the two, are still in that lonely jail in Germany, and Martin Bormann, of course, was the author of the continuation of Nazification under the Bormann Brotherhood after World War II was winding down to get ready again for World War III and this process of turning the world to becoming Christian that is going on with our leaders in this country is part of that same movement. But Martin Bormann and Rudolf Hess, according to this article, met with the Duke and Duchess of Windsor, and that Errol Flynn was the man that made the introductions. This article says this extraordinary role in the meeting, bugged by British agents, is the latest shocker in the story of Errol Flynn's Nazi connections. Charles Hyman was on the radio in San Francisco, and I heard him at the time. And while he was on the radio, a woman who worked with British intelligence called him and offered information about the wartime files of M5 and M6 from British military intelligence. And Charles Hyman continued contact with this person, who then went to the files and got Flynn's activities from 1934 to 1953, when British intelligence kept an eye on him. He arrived in London in August 1937. That's when he was working with Dr. Urban, who, as I say, had the American citizenship, who was a Gestapo member. And according to Charles Hyman, there was an intelligence alarm set out that the Duke and Duchess of Windsor, who were always pro Hitler, they were very much in favor of the Nazification of Europe, had met Errol Flynn, was the person who was introducing Martin Bormann and Hess to the Duke and Duchess of Windsor. This article from the New York Post says that Errol Flynn was traced to the Hotel Maurice in Paris, where the Duke and Duchess of Windsor had a friend, Charles Badeau. That's whose chateau they were married in, and he was a very wealthy industrialist and Nazi collaborator, and he was in a Miami jail in 1944 awaiting charges of treason, and according to the New York Post article, he commits suicide. I imagine any witness to a Nazi collaboration trial that involved the Duke and Duchess of Windsor or Errol Flynn or Martin Bormann or Rudolf Hess wouldn't have much value in terms of life expectancy. You would expect that he would die in a Miami jail before he broke the connections of this notorious combination of Hess, Bormann, the great hero, Errol Flynn, and so forth. According to the New York Post article, Errol Flynn was seen in Paris with the Windsors, and they discussed pro-Nazi British aristocrats, getting them to line up with Adolf Hitler, getting England to line up with Adolf Hitler. And that Hyman claims that Flynn's image as an adventurer, or an unwitting friend, or a Nazi sympathizer was just by a happenstance that he just fell into a trap with members of the Gestapo is totally untrue. He worked with the Nazis, the French Nazis, the British Nazis, members of the Gestapo, American citizens, American traitors. But this Dr. Urban that worked with him, or the American Joseph Mengele's, if he was in fact an American citizen, makes the rise of Hitler even more insidious than ever. The story of Adolf Hitler's being put to power by people by Henry Ford, the Rockefellers, U.S. Steel, the major corporations, Wall Street, and the rise of Hitler, there's a whole book, many books on that, is bad. But then the law enforcement agencies that did not come forward and tell the truth about those people and their naturalization and the role that American Justice Department, the FBI, played in protecting those people is notorious. We know that the role of the agencies has been notorious in studying the murder of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Medgar Evers, Malcolm X, the civil rights leaders, even the shooting recently of Vernon Jordan. They don't drag their feet, they assist the criminals. But this behavior of the justices, the police, the FBI, the federal agents to find criminals is just a cover for their supporting these criminals, these genocidal policies. The blame for genocide or murders or deaths can't be put on the shoulder of Adolf Hitler alone or on...